I'm Frances Cook. Welcome to Making Sense, supported by KiwiBank. Paying off the mortgage early is a good thing, right? Well, one New Zealander worked hard to do that and then decided he'd actually shot himself in the foot. When a big accident happened, the money he'd sunk into the mortgage wasn't available, when he could have really done with the cash savings to get through a tough time. Meanwhile, he later discovered investing into shares, and on looking back, wished he'd put more money into those investments instead. So, when is paying off the mortgage early a good idea? When is it not? And how do you balance it all? Here's how he would handle it now if he had his time over again. Welcome, Nick Carr from Your Money Blueprint. Now, you're someone who has been chasing financial freedom for quite a while. You and I have talked actually a few times before, but for anyone who's meeting you for the first time now, when did you get interested in personal finance?
Yeah. Hi, Frances. Thanks for having me on. It would have been around 2014, pretty much 10 years ago now. It was after I'd just done a bad injury to my back and I was on ACC cover, out of work on 80% of income. And at the time I was spending 100% of my income. So, when you get down to 80%, something doesn't add up there. So it was a bit of struggle town for a while, keeping up with the mortgage and all that. So I was like, oh, I can't live like this. It's too stressful. And I did a lot of reading during that time and stumbled across the financial independence community. I was like, oh, well, this sounds great. You know, not having to work if you don't want to, or not having to worry about money. And yeah, that's where it all kicked off. And I just went down that rabbit hole for about a year or two, just reading and learning everything I could.
Yeah. And, you know, saying there about you get this injury and you were spending 100% of everything you earned. And then, okay, ACC kicks in, thank goodness, but it only hits 80% of what you were earning before. I mean, how discretionary were your expenses? Were you able to make any changes for that? And you're busy trying to heal. You've hurt your back. You're busy. You're off work. You're trying to heal. You have to worry about all these expenses. Was there anything you could cut, or how bad was it?
No, not really. It was pretty bad, to be honest. A few months earlier, I'd recently upsized house as well, so I'd just taken on a larger mortgage, which meant my discretionary spending was already reduced. And I had a roommate as well, so that brought income and it was still tight. I don't think I would have been lent as much as I was in today's conditions, but the banks were a bit more lenient then, and I found myself in a little bit of trouble for a while. So, I was almost forced to downsize house really, and that's what I did. I sold up and bought a place about a third the price in a suburb in Wellington, which has a bit of a stigma about it. So managed to get a good deal there, and that created so much breathing space, and just the cut in mortgage payments alone created a lot of breathing room, and we could actually start saving quite a bit of money.
Yeah, it's that thing, isn't it? And I think especially in New Zealand, but all sorts of places around the world, there's that thing where you can really become house poor, where you're spending so much just trying to keep a roof over your head. There's nothing left for anything else. And also you're locked into those payments. You know, you say you were forced basically to sell up, find something cheaper. Was that a long process? How was it getting to that point?
Not particularly, no. As I said, I was almost backed into a corner, so... Yeah, it was a really quick process. At the time, it was 2014, so the market wasn't too bad at that time. And managed to sell pretty easily, just had to be realistic with the price. And there's plenty of houses on the market to buy at the time, so there's no problem.
Well, that's good. I mean, you think about people trying to sell at the moment. It's a bit hairy out there, but that's a story for another day. I mean, before all of this happened, right? As you say, you were spending 100% of what you earned. I think that's pretty common for a lot of people. A lot of people just, they get paid, they spend it. And if they get paid more, they find other things that they lock into payments on it. And that's super, super common. When you were growing up, you know, did your parents talk to you about money? Was there much talked about at school? Was this something you ever really thought about before you hit this crunch crisis point?
Not at all, to be honest. I don't even know if I gave money more than an hour's thought all through my 20s, really. Just, everything in my early 20s was just on loan through university and things like that. And once I started working, it was just common practice, at least in my circles, just to spend everything I earned. I was living in Wellington CBD at the time after university, and just, you know, all the temptations around town of, restaurants and good food and things. It's very easy to spend money, and I was having a good time, and I didn't see any reason not to. My parents didn't teach me about money. I guess even if they did, I probably wouldn't have listened anyway, because, it's just, sometimes you just need to learn these things for yourself, I think. And as a parent now, I think the best way of teaching is just by doing and modeling the right behaviors. Because if you say one thing and do another, the kids pick up on that pretty quickly.
I know. I went to get mole mapped the other day, and the dermatologist told me off, and she said, "I can tell that you don't wear a hat because your hair parting has actually got sun damage." And she said, if you're trying to teach your kid to wear a hat all the time, you have to wear one, because otherwise they are going to figure out pretty quickly that you don't wear one, and they're going to get to an age where they say, well, why do I have to if you don't? And it really is that way with everything with kids, absolutely everything. If you don't do it, they're not going to stick with it either. So yeah, showing and doing yourself, I think, is the biggest thing with money. And I so get what you're saying about you probably wouldn't have listened anyway. That's another thing. People say all the time, oh, they should teach money in schools. They should do all this stuff. And I agree. I 100% agree. Some schools do, but most don't. But the problem is, would you listen? I don't know. I don't think I was listening to people about much when I was a teenager.
I agree. It's got such a broad spectrum of kids. There's going to be some that will listen. But the majority, I'd say, probably wouldn't sink in too much. But then again, I don't know the courses being run. So if they're practical, that's the main thing, I guess, because probably don't want too much theory base. Might just go over the head. But if you can, give common everyday examples and make them practical exercises, then that would go a long way, I think.
Make it real, eh? Make it real. Okay. So you hit crunch point in 2014. You've hurt your back. You've realized the money situation's not working. There was absolutely no fat in the system for something to go wrong. How old were you at that point?
2014, that would have been 34 years old.
Right. Okay. So then you start to go down a rabbit hole. How did you first, you're in this crunchy point where things need to change. How did you even come across the financial independence movement from there? Were you just sort of Googling, what do I do to make money better? How'd you come across it?
I was doing a lot of Googling. I was basically bedridden for a good 6 months or so before I could even get my surgery. I actually ended up having two surgeries, but that meant a lot of on the bedtime lying down. And I can't remember what exactly I Googled, but it must have been something along the lines of, how do I, save or earn money, something along those lines. And the first websites I tended to come across were Mr. Money Moustache and Early Retirement Extreme was another one. And I just really leaned into those. I honestly didn't think early retirement was a decision, a choice. I just thought, the age is 65, that's when you retire. I honestly didn't think it was an option to do it any sooner. And once I found that out, you run the numbers and you realize, it is an option, and life can be lived differently than the norm.
It's funny, isn't it? Speaking of making it real for kids, we can also make it real for ourselves. The idea of saving and investing and all that for retirement for 65, while important, that's, for me, that's 30 years away. Doesn't feel very real, doesn't feel very like I'm going to get a fun little reward for that now. Whereas the idea of early retirement, and I could retire when I'm 40, when I'm 50, you know, whatever my timeline is, however long it takes me to hit that number I need, that's so much more real. You know, going to Bali in my 50s rather than waiting until I'm 70, how good, right? I don't know. I find that more motivating. Was that one of the things that got you?
Yeah, it was. Initially, it was the early retirement and getting away from work thing. I just, I hated my job at the time. That was the main priority. But over time, yeah, it's definitely changed towards slowing down sooner, even before retirement, and just enjoying experiences now, especially with a young family. It's almost like getting the best of both worlds, I think, where you can, if you do well up front, front load things a bit, you can get a good mix of slowing down and still being able to retire at a reasonable time.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I know people talk a lot about FIRE, financial independence, retire early. I personally don't really go for the RE stage of it, the retire early. I like the idea of being independent and being able to walk away from things. But I also find a lot of satisfaction in the right type of work, which financial independence allows me to pursue. You know, so talk to me a bit about your perspective on that. You know, obviously you've been doing this for 10 years now. So where have you landed on that spectrum for yourself?
Yeah, I'm similar. I've landed on the kind of balance is the key here. I don't want to retire early at the moment. You know, it'd be pretty boring. I've landed on kind of working, you know, 30 hours a week and then pursuing other interests during the week as well. I've set things up, I can go out midweek and play a game of tennis or, just this morning I've done my domestic duties. I've, you know, baked some shortbread and things like that. Just little things like that just to keep your life in balance is good. And, you know, if I was working all the time, I wouldn't be able to make use of these outlets. And I get to involve myself a lot in the school as well. Like my daughter's 6 years old and she's just done cross country and they had an Olympics day at school. I've been to all those events. It's just, and I know I'm going to look back and I'm glad I, you know, didn't work so much to enjoy this time while they wanted to spend time with me because chances are in 10 years, they won't want much to do with me.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Everyone says this to you. Oh, it goes so quick. It goes so quick. And there's so much pressure on it. But it's true. It does go quick. The time that they actually want to spend around you does go quick. And it's often in the main earning years for a lot of people. So it is so hard to balance that. And I do think sorting the finances helps. Let's rewind a little bit. So you started looking into the financial independence movement. You were at that point interested in the retire early. What were some of the first steps you took when you wanted to change your money? You're seeing all of these interesting ideas online, you're seeing this financial independence roadmap. What were some of the first changes you made?
The first thing I looked at was the biggest expenses that I had. At the time, it was housing and food. I didn't have to worry about transport too much because I worked for a company with a company vehicle, but otherwise that probably would have been my second or third biggest expense. So, yeah, tackled the downsizing house thing first, which managed to save, I think it was around $10,000 a year from memory, probably more. And so, yeah, just one quick decision like that. And they didn't really see a downgrade to our lifestyle or anything like that. We didn't really notice too much changes. So that was an easy one for us. And, yeah, just a bit more mindful of our food spends. I think we're spending about $1,000 a month for the two of us, and this was back in 2014 where it was quite a lot. So yeah, we made quite a few cuts there as well. That was a bit harder, but that helped. And we ditched Sky as well, was another one. There was a regular payment of I think about $80 a month at the time. And yeah, just those few changes changed the situation dramatically. And with the proceeds from the sale of the house as well, the larger house, we managed to buy the new house freehold as well, which meant we no longer had that mortgage either. So, yeah, it meant 10 years of mortgage-free savings, basically, until this year.
Yeah. And we're going to come back to that because, of course, you now work as a financial advisor or a financial planner. Which is it?
Well, yes, I'm called a financial advisor. I do see myself more as a planner, though. I feel like advisor has connotations around it in terms of sales and marketing and things like that. But yeah,
okay, financial planner. We shall stick with that then. So you go from this journey of not really thinking about money at all, discovering the financial independence movement, now working within the financial industry. Like you're not just living this yourself, you're helping other people figure it out. What was that journey like of making these changes, getting yourself qualified, figuring out how you wanted to contribute, and now it's your job, it's your thing? How long did that take, and how, when you look back, how much of a different person are you now?
Yeah, well, that last part's a big question, but the process took probably about 3 years all up. In 2014, once I discovered the FIRE movement, it was about a year and a half of just religiously reading and listening. And after making the changes myself in that year and a half, I was like, well, this stuff really works. And, you know, I'd like to spread the word somewhere. And first thing I did, I started volunteering actually at a local budget advisor, and just helping those really in need was really rewarding. And I was like, oh man, that, you know, this is cool, and I could do this for myself. So yeah, shortly after that, I earned my financial advisor stripes, which took about 6 months of online study. And from there, yeah, just started my own business. I knew I didn't want to work for anyone else. I had my own ideas on how things should be and what type of advice I wanted to offer. And yes, it's been that way ever since for the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. Well, I think once you've got that sort of financial independence mindset, it's a different mindset. Even if you're working in that industry and you're qualified in it, it's still, that mindset is a really interesting thing. Not to say that you're perfect though, right? Because you say you have a big regret. One of your biggest financial regrets is paying off the mortgage too fast. So how much was the mortgage at that point? How aggressive did you get with it?
Yeah, so when I made that comment, I was referring to the period between 2009 and 2013. So this was before I discovered FIRE. I owned an apartment in Wellington City. I purchased that in 2009 at about 29 years of age. And yeah, things were fairly comfortable at that stage. It was a two-bedroom apartment. I lived in one room and rented out the second room. And with the income from the second room, I basically put that extra onto the mortgage. So that was about $1,000 a month at that time.
Okay. So why was it a bad thing?
Couple of reasons. I mean, one, the financials, everything's obviously easy in hindsight, but during that five-year period, share market returns were about 11.5% to 12%. The mortgage rates at the time over that five-year period averaged around 5.5%. So once you take out the fees and the taxes of investing, that's about a 5% gap between paying off the mortgage and investing. And that would have meant $11,000 extra if I'd invested that $1,000 a month instead. So yeah, but basically I missed out on 11,000, but as I say, I'm never going to, it was a missed opportunity for sure.
Yeah. When you look at it, cause it's hard, right? When you're managing your money, there's always trade-offs and all sorts of different trade-offs, you know, cutting back here versus enjoying life versus still being able to enjoy life in the future. And one of the trade-offs I get people messaging me about all the time is, should I put extra into investments or should I put extra into my mortgage? When you are looking at that and helping people weigh it up now, what sort of factors do you think are involved and what factors do you wish you'd taken into consideration at that time?
Yeah, I mean, I think the finances are only part of it. Obviously, it's really important. You want to get good return on your money, but to sit back and say that paying off the mortgage is a better return, I don't think that's the case generally. For paying off the mortgage, I don't think that's a reason. I mean, on average, the share market returns around 9-10% a year, historically speaking, and mortgage rates are around 6% on average. So, even with fees and taxes taken out of investments, there's still kind of like a 1.5-2% premium on shares over paying off the mortgage. So, yeah, that's one thing to consider. Another important factor is liquidity, and that's another thing that's kind of hurt me by paying off the apartment mortgage too quickly. By liquidity, I mean having available money in the bank. By paying off the mortgage with all my extra money, when it came time for 2014 and my struggles, I didn't have enough saved in the bank really to provide that breathing room to keep that larger property. Yeah, having your house in order so that you've got enough cash outside the mortgage always helps, and not sinking so much into the mortgage. Another factor to think about is your goals as well. So, if you've got lots of short-term goals for your money, like travel or weddings, things like that, you don't want to be chucking that into a mortgage. You need that money to be available in the next, five, whatever odd years. The only time you want to be paying extra off the mortgage is, when you're looking at longer time frames. Like basically, you don't need the money for decades. Yeah, they're the main ones, and the other probably factor is asset allocation as well. If, for example, I'll have a client come to me that might have a low allocation towards shares already. If they're thinking about paying extra on the mortgage, it might not always be the best idea, because that's basically another conservative-ish option, and it could be leaving potentially a lot of money on the table by missing out on investment returns. So that's one other factor. And finally, the last thing is, sorry for the long answer here, is just getting your toes wet with investing, I think, is another thing to consider. A lot of people come to me, they focused on paying off the mortgage right through the decades, and then, they get large amounts of money to invest, and they're kind of scared. By starting early, even if it's just, $20 a week or whatever, you get used to dealing with volatility and just a different terminology. And then by the time your mortgage is paid off, you're ready to hit the investing ground running.
Yeah, let's tease apart some of those, because those are some great examples. You talk about the issue of you ran into your accident and you didn't have savings, a big enough savings cushion, because you'd been paying it all off. And I think this is something that people don't necessarily think about, that when you pay off a slice of mortgage early, that money is gone, and it's not spending, it is a saving, but it's saving in a way that it's not going to come back if you're paying off a chunk of mortgage. There are other ways you can do it, with things like a revolving account or things where you might be able to take it back out. But most people, when they talk about making an extra payment on their mortgage, they're literally paying off a chunk to the bank. That money is gone. You're not going to get it back unless you apply for an extension on your mortgage. So if you're making extra payments without having good savings set up, that can actually be bad financial behavior, can't it? You really do need those cash savings there, ready to access. Like you say, life happens at any time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a common myth, really, where people think they'll pay down the mortgage more quickly, it will mean the mortgage payments will reduce, but it's not actually the case. The monthly payments, as long as you've got the mortgage, will actually stay the same. It's just that if you pay it down more quickly, you'll be paying more principal and less interest, which is a good thing. But yeah, it doesn't free up your cash flow at all until you're mortgage free, and that can take decades. So yeah, it's definitely something to be aware of.
Yeah, and let's dive into that side as well, because you talked a bit about the returns, where I think a lot of people are surprised by this, that the share market often does return more on average over several years than assets like property. And especially if you're just comparing solely on the mortgage percentage, then the mortgage costs you less than the share market should give you. This all being over years, though, isn't it? It's an averaged out over 1 year, it might be heaps, another year, it might be less. Same thing with interest rates. It's kind of hard to figure out those numbers, right? And figure out what's going to be the best one for me over the next few years. How do you recommend people look at that now?
Yeah, no, that's a great point and a good question because, yeah, the time frame changes things dramatically for me anyway in my consideration. Yeah, if you shorten down the time frame to, say, 3 or 5 years, then, yeah, it definitely starts to favour paying down the mortgage, I think, because the share market returns are more unpredictable the shorter the time frame you go. So, yeah, you can be pretty confident that shares will return, you know, probably around 8-10% over periods of 10 years plus, as long as you're invested wisely and diversified. But yeah, when you get periods less than 10 years, anything can happen really. And yeah, paying off the mortgage, if the decision was for, if you could pay off the mortgage in less than say 7-8 years, then that starts to really favor paying down the mortgage if you've got the money here.
Yeah, because as you said earlier, when you make those extra payments, they go straight onto the principal. For anyone who hasn't come across that before, the amount that you get loaned from the bank to buy the house, that's the principal. That's the actual loan amount. But then you often pay the same amount again in interest over the lifetime of that loan because it's over 30 years-ish for most people. So even though it's a small interest rate, it builds up over time. If you make an extra payment, it goes straight onto the loan amount. All of those future interest rate payments are wiped out. Can be really powerful. But like you say, it works the same with investments into shares. You make an investment into shares, they keep earning for you over decades, decades, decades. And that's even more powerful. You actually ran the numbers on this for your situation, right? And you calculated the two options, what it meant on the numbers. What did it come back with?
Yeah, so on that mortgage from 2009 to 2013, I referred to earlier on the apartment, yeah, paying $12,000 extra a year, yeah, it came back to $6,000 that I would have been better off investing. Even if you go with the historical averages of 6% mortgage rate and say 9% share returns, then I still would have been about $1,000 or so better off investing.
And then, of course, that all keeps building over time, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's just a 5-year period. So, yes, and the small percentages, it's amazing how much difference it makes over time as well. You can see that with a reduction in fees. So, yeah, investing in shares is no different. If you can get just a percentage more, it can make a big difference over the long run.
You mentioned earlier about it not just being sort of the money side of it. And I think there's also, that's a really important part to dive into as well. Because one thing that strikes me about putting everything into paying off the mortgage early, I mean, I am a fan of making extra payments on the mortgage, but I also, you know, your point about getting started on shares, looking at that, I think is really important and something that does get missed because we are so housing mad. Not just in New Zealand, Australia too, a lot of places, super housing mad, and we forget to think about everything else. If you're putting everything into, particularly if it's your home, if you don't have investment properties and things like that, and you're putting everything into paying off that mortgage early, you're putting everything into one asset, right? And I mean, is your home even really an asset? It's a saved cost, but it's not going to earn you anything in the future, which you might well need.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, definitely not very diversified. And yeah, it's one thing I always look at for my clients is how much they have in their own housing. And yeah, a big part of that is just making sure they're not too invested into just one asset class. As we've seen over the last few years, housing prices do go down despite what we were told over the last 20 years by everyone and by quite a lot as well. It's, And if someone was relying on their house to provide for their retirement, maybe they were going to downsize or relocate. If everything wasn't housing and they were making that decision now, they might be in a bit of trouble. So it's good to plan for assets outside of housing.
The other side to that is, of course, the security issue, because, of course, a paid-off home is big security. Are you mortgage-free now, did you say earlier?
No, definitely not. No, not even close.
Ooh, okay. So you've got a mortgage again. You were mortgage-free for a while, but you've got a mortgage again now?
Yeah, so we were mortgage-free for about 10 years in Wellington, and we've built up north, got completed in January this year, and yeah, that was a lot of money. And yeah, so we've got a nice new big mortgage again.
Do you know, it's interesting that, and please correct me, because I'm going to be talking generally of what I've seen a lot of people do, and then you tell me how you fit into this. But I think it sounds like this fits into what I've seen a lot of people do, which is you pull back on all of the spending and you start to build up that safety of savings and a bit of cushion and use that time to reassess. And I've seen a lot of people do that. And then they'll try and get, you know, the house issue sorted, bit of stability, bit of security, focus on getting all the ducks in a row so that they've got this safe base to go from. And from there, you can start making big career moves, earning more, start investing. And from there, you might at some point start spending more again, start taking on a big mortgage again. But you're doing it from this totally different base that's really solid, really stable, that gives you the ability to make big swings. Those big swings can pay off really well, but they also might not. You've got this stable base that lets you take those risks that can pay off big time. Now, how do you fit within that? Does that match your journey? If there's any parts that don't, please tell me.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's almost like we're back in 2014 again with the big mortgage and high repayments. But yeah, you're right. We've come from it from a totally different angle this time, where it was a very deliberate decision, very conscious. Having a much larger house for the family to grow into, big section, and just in a location that, you know, was really ticked all the boxes for us. So, yeah, we've used our savings to buy ourselves what we think is a much better life. You know, that's what money's there for at the end of the day. It's not there to hoard. It's there to be used. Yeah, the only thing is once you start building up your money, the options do open up. So, it just has to be mindful, because otherwise you can just waste it very easily.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had the reason I sort of spot this journey, and I see people going through it all the time, because obviously I'm having these conversations with people constantly, and I notice it because I did the same thing. There was a sort of 2 to 3 year period where I would say it was our hustle period, our sprint period, whatever you want to call it, where we really buttoned down. We lived in a much smaller house. We were living in a cheaper area. We put a lot into our careers. This is, you know, the we here is my husband and I. And we used that time. That was a real building time. And it was only 2 or 3 years. But what we created in that time built the foundation for us to now live a very different lifestyle, where I earn a lot more than I did then and have much bigger financial goals. But if I hadn't laid that groundwork, I wouldn't be living in the bigger house that I live in now, that's quite, you know, we're comfortable enough, you know, it's fine. And it's not a stress, a lot of the decisions we make, but it only comes because we had that sprint period. And I think sometimes people look at that sprint period of cutting back, living a bit smaller, living in a more intentional way, and they worry that they're being told to live like that forever. I personally wouldn't want to live like that forever. I don't think I would recommend people do, but what you can achieve with that time can enable all the rest of it, right? I mean, what do you think? How long do you think a good sprint period should go for?
Yeah, no, I do like the idea of the sprint period. And like yourself, we did a lot of the sprint pre-kids.
Easier then, right?
Yeah.
Gotta be realistic.
It's going back to the kind of schooling thing. If you could, you know, do this stuff earlier, it would be so much easier. But yeah, once you have kids, or once you you know, gets your tastes and your champagne budgets and stuff start coming along with age, it becomes a lot harder. In terms of a period, it honestly depends on, you know, what you want out of life. For us, we probably needed every bit of that 10 years of saving hard, with the size of the mortgage we've now taken on. But yeah, for someone else, yeah, it could only be, you know, 2 or 3 years. If it's kind of not so big a step up in lifestyle.
Yeah, I've got to say, when we eased off, it was a very slow and gradual easing off. But it is, it's really, I sometimes I think people expect me to be super frugal. They see me out at cafes or whatever. And I do, there are certain parts of my life, I'm still quite frugal in some areas, but there are certain parts of my life where I enjoy splashing out now. But it's within my budget and it doesn't cause me stress. And I think that's the big key, is figuring out how to balance your money so that it doesn't cause you stress, right? I mean, do you feel stressed now being in your situation with the new fancy house?
Yeah, if I'm being honest, it's, yeah, has been a little bit, back to that stage again, because, earlier this year, I actually, left a second job I had. It was actually my main job. And, yeah, that meant a corresponding decrease in income with, increase in expenses. So yeah, we're back in a stage of life where we're doing okay. But we're not able to save much at the moment. Yes, it's just a life stage we're going through, and, you know, we all go through cycles, and yeah, hopefully in a year or two, we'll have more breathing room again. A lot of it is through our own doing as well, because we've actually held on to our previous house in Wellington. So we're doing what I advise my clients probably not to do so much, is we've got a lot of our assets in housing right now, but it's only temporary. Once the Wellington market picks up, we'll probably end up selling that rental, and yeah, we'll definitely be in a much more comfortable place then.
Yeah, how are you tackling the mortgage versus investments this time around? Bearing in mind, yeah, as you say, property market is not great. You probably don't want to sell unless you have to currently.
Yeah, it's at the moment, it's not really too much of a decision for us. All our income's going on our expenses at the moment. We're not saving much at all. I can't answer that question, but if it were, if we did have spare money, then I'd be tackling it the same way I've talked about, in terms of, when do we need the money? If we don't need it soon, then should we pay off the mortgage or should we invest? And I'd probably look at the current mortgage rates, which a lot of them are around 6 or so at the moment. You know, what are the long-term averages of shares? Higher than 6, probably invest a lot of that. But we've discussed a lot of kind of like binary thinking, pay off mortgage or invest. But yeah, I think a lot of the times the real answer is actually a bit of both.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me more about that, because I fully agree with that point of view, but I don't want to get ahead of what you're going to say on it.
So if it's a decision between paying off the mortgage and investing, and you've done all the other thinking around, you've got enough liquid cash, you're diversified, your goals are covered and all that stuff, then once you've ruled all that out, I'd just basically look at the current mortgage rates and use that as a base for my decision. If mortgage rates were around 8%, I'd think that's around the long-term average of shares after taxes and fees. And I'd probably put pretty much everything on the mortgage at that 8% rate, because that's a sure thing. Whereas if mortgage rates were around 5%, then, you know, I'd probably go maybe around 60% shares or 50% shares and 50% mortgage. So you can come up with your own formulas and ratios. But yeah, again, if mortgage rates ever got to 3% again, like they were, then you'd probably be better off investing 100% of your savings, really.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny, isn't it, that as you say, that binary thinking of, should I pay off the mortgage or invest? I do a bit of both. And I think that is the beauty of, you know, there's so many options to invest now. You can invest big chunks if that works for you. But if you have literally $5 extra a week, you can also invest that. And if you literally have $10, you've looked at your budget, you've got your savings, you've got your little bit of wiggle room, and you've got $10 that you say, I want to put this to work, you could put $5 onto the mortgage, depending on how it's structured, and $5 into an investment account. There's no problem with that, right? That's still, I think sometimes people look at smaller amounts or they look at splitting it, and it's often they're looking for the silver bullet. But splitting it up a bit, and still, it's all a step forward, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I found with this question we're discussing today, it's very passionate people on both sides of the fence. Yeah, there's either the no, absolutely, you must pay off the mortgage, or no way, you've definitely got to invest. And there's not much middle ground. And but yeah, I think the answer lies in doing both most of the time.
Yeah. Why do you think people don't talk about this more? Because I feel like there's a lot of discussion around paying off the mortgage early. And like you say, that is often a good thing, but not always. There's not much discussion of maybe at certain times it's not the best thing. Why do you think people don't talk about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that probably comes into kind of behavioral finance, really. It's just people's psyches. And, you know, you start talking to someone who's decided to pay down the mortgage that, you know, maybe investing is better. Then, you know, they'll feel attacked, like they might. No one wants to feel like they've made a decision that's not optimal. And for others who have paid down the mortgage when maybe they could have invested, they just honestly don't care. They just, a lot of people I speak with don't care about the returns, what they've missed out on. They just want to be rid of the mortgage and at any cost. And, you know, you can't reason with someone who's got good reasons like that. And likewise, if someone's invested their money, you know, they're just hard to convince that paying down more of the mortgage is a good idea, because they've got it in their head that investment returns are always better. And it's hard to change someone's mind, basically. And that all comes down to behavioral finance.
Yeah, it is interesting that, isn't it? Because I feel like this gets talked about a lot on the podcast, where it is so much more than the numbers. And if you really want security for your family, if security is a big value for you, then probably the paying off the mortgage is going to win no matter what the numbers are doing, right? Because then you've paid off this big cost. It's not hanging over your head anymore. The bank's not going to be able to take it off you no matter what. You still, I think people sometimes forget, you're still going to have rates and insurance and things like that. So it's not entirely gone, but it's mostly gone. It's pretty good. Versus if you're looking at, I mean, there's all sorts of different personality reasons for wanting to invest in shares, but that idea of having income that is working for you while you're sleeping, being able to walk away from the job, you know, you're always going to need to buy food, keep the lights on, all that stuff. To have money coming in takes an investment like shares. And so I think, like you say, so much of it is talking to people about their values, right? And it's the numbers you've worked out are brilliant. And yet I think so much of this for people is going to come down to what makes them feel happy with their money, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You can, you know, discuss all the other stuff till you're blue in the face, like what are your goals? What's your time frames? But yeah, at the end of the day, it's your money, it's your decision. And yeah, even with all the information on hand, if you know, if that's the way you feel, then that's just what you're going to do. Yeah, there's just things to be careful of if you're going to, you know, go in wholeheartedly like that.
Yeah. When you're talking to clients about it, what sort of things end up being tipping point for them? Does it often come down more to numbers or more to personality?
I think it's a bit of both of the clients I see. Yeah, a lot of the discussions I see online is more, it's definitely more about the money side of things. But yeah, the people I speak with every day and the clients, yeah, it's both. A lot of the times I think the personality wins out over the financial returns.
Interesting. Okay. If you had one top tip, main takeaway for people that are thinking, ugh, mortgage, investments, what do I do? What would be sort of your baseline point for people to remember?
Yeah, I mean, probably what we've touched on towards the end here, it's not a either or decision. It's something you can do both of. So yeah, don't wreck your brain trying to decide what's best. Yeah, just do what you think is right, and it doesn't have to be one or the other. try to consider other things like when you need the money. The other thing as well, a lot of people pay down their mortgage quickly and then upsize house, pay down the mortgage, upsize house. If you're going to continuously do that, then you seriously need to start thinking about investing in that case, because it's going to take a very long time before your mortgage is paid off, and you never know when you might get in trouble having everything in housing. So yeah, just keep those things in mind, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. And investing takes a while to work, right? So getting started early, even if it's a little bit, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, that's the other thing as well. It's hard for the payoff mortgage camp to see, because the results from investing here do take a long time, whereas the impact of paying down the mortgage is immediate. So you get that kind of dopamine hit early on paying down the mortgage, whereas yeah, investing it takes much longer. So yeah, definitely.
All right, awesome. Well, if people want to know more from you, maybe keep an eye on your journey, where can they find you?
I've got a website which I actively keep up to date. I write regular blogs, and I've got about 70 odd financial calculators on there now. Some of them paying off the mortgage or investing, all kinds of retirement calculators that can be found at yourmoneyblueprint.co.nz. And yeah, my email is ncar@yourmoneyblueprint.co.nz. They're the main ways to find me. I'm not too active on social media. I do have a Facebook page, but yeah, that's about it. I haven't got into all the new stuff.
Probably very good for your mental health. Every time someone talks to me and they're like, oh no, I'm quite offline, I'm like, good for you, and I really need to do that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That's Nick Carr from Your Money Blueprint. Now, if you want to get in touch with me, I am very much on social media, so you can send through money questions for a future podcast or anything else, really. Find me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as Frances Cook NZ. Don't forget to subscribe to Making Sense so that you never miss a trick with your money. Now, if you are, of course, someone who's offline, I've got options for you too. I've got a free weekly newsletter you can join. That's the Money Memo. It's on my website, francescook.co.nz. Sign up there for some goodness in your inbox each week. Till next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.